This is Xformation, brought to you by the Center for Growth and Opportunity, Utah State University. I'm Will, and today I'm joined, as always, by my colleague, Caden. Caden, how are you doing today?
Always. I'm doing good. I'm just kind of hanging out, thinking about things, antitrust, thinking about things tech, trying to figure out how to tweet. I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been making an attempt, and I think it's pretty successful. I have 76 followers, which is not... You know, it's not nothing, but at the same
time, sweet spot, right?
The That's quality a sweet spot of my followers. Engagement.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
the amount of check marks in my follower list is just incredible. And I'm really proud of it. But
I've always wanted to write a little, like a short little piece on this, like this idea of centrality, as it's called.
Yeah.
I actually probably will do something probably in the next day or so on this if I can get it cranked out quickly. Yeah.
Well, I'm definitely going to read it.
This idea that, like, as you shift the number of followers that you have, this idea, the centrality, right? This, like, just a measure of how central you are in the network. That mm-hmm. that changes. So you have this like very clear positional shift, right? Your position within the network shifts very, very clearly as you, as the number of followers you have and the responses that you get typically. So
this sounds like the algorithm to success on Twitter.
The algorithms to success. What's the algorithm to success?
I don't know. You tell me.
I don't
have like 1,000 followers, right?
Not really. I'm pretty. So I think probably the threshold is like right around 10,000. 10,000. And then something shifts in that medium, right? That like you become bigger positionally. I think that the actual shift occurs in that space.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm at the low end. 76. Still making my way to the top.
Making your way to the top. Yeah. So
how are you doing?
I'm doing well. My birthday's coming in a couple days. So just trying to, I think I may take a day off. Just kind of hang out.
Good for you.
Do a couple little projects around the house. Yeah, let's talk about the Epic Games stuff, right?
Yeah, you want to?
Yeah, let's talk about what's going on here. This has been kind of fun to follow, right?
It's so according to one of our student fellows, is really interesting to watch the smaller game companies take on the big tech giants. But I mean, here's the thing: it's a game company that's made billions of dollars on one game. So it's not so much the little game companies, but
is this one? See, this feels like this part of this narrative of big tech, right? That's really, really interesting, right? It's one large company against another large company. This kind of feels like an industry fight, right? Am I wrong to feel like this is an industry fight?
No, I don't think so at all. And I think that Tim Sweeney, which is he the CEO of Epic Games? I'm pretty sure he's the CEO. Sure, yeah. He definitely founded it. Tim Sweeney is kind of a fun character to watch because he's very like anti whatever you think he's going to go against it is basically the way he is. And that's
he's
kind of
maverick.
How he's run. Exactly.
He's a maverick.
Exactly. He's a maverick. And so,
all right, so yeah,
it's been fun watching him. Right. And while I wouldn't argue that Epic Games is a big or I wouldn't argue that Epic Games is a small company. I would argue that Tim Sweeney has that small company mindset that's really interesting to watch. So maybe industry inviting, maybe. Seems like it.
I mean, I could be wrong. I don't know. I'm always willing to shift my position. Maybe there's something more kind of fundamental here, right? Because there's a lot going on, right? There is, to me, this entire thing. So yeah, give me a lay of the land here. Tell me what's going on. So we got this Epic versus Apple case that's going on. Two cases, actually, right? There's
two.
Yeah, there's actually two. We're focusing so much on the Apple versus Epic, we're kind of losing sight.
Yeah,
of
because they're in trial right now. Google has somehow successfully been able to put this off for I don't know how long, but you know, they haven't been to trial yet. But Apple is just kind of taking it head on, which is, well, it's exciting for me, right? I love watching trials happen, but
lawyers.
The question is,
see, this is like me going through, me going through like modeling. I'm like, ooh, that's really fascinating. And you watching trials are the same thing, right?
Yeah, I watched the way a lawyer presents an argument or asks a question, and I think, ooh, that was really nice. I like the way he tilted his head. How interesting. No, but I mean, this is just a chapter in a saga of antitrust suits that have been popping up over the past couple of years. And this chapter starts with Fortnite. Do you know what Fortnite is? Have you ever played Fortnite?
I've never played Fortnite, but like my cousins play Fortnite all the time, and I feel out of place because I'm not a gamer by any means, right? I mean, I played games back in the day, but like I'm just not a gamer. I read and I write. I don't know, right? I feel like I'm, like I said, I feel like I'm out of time sometimes.
You're a nerd, but you're not a gaming nerd. Is that
exactly
what you're saying?
Right. And the gaming nerds are very like, and it's not that I have any hate towards the gaming nerds. I find all that fascinating. Right. And I, you know, follow games as they're being developed and generally like, you know, I'm pretty embedded within the gaming culture. So it's not like point being is like, I know the memes. So yeah. I guess that's,
We all know the memes.
Well, okay. All right. I've got no unique call to this space then.
I share
do
a
you
similar
play Fortnite?
View.
Have you played Fortnite?
No, I haven't. No, I have a friend who streams on Twitch. His name is Torque182, I think is what he's going. No, it's not. It's
Torque182.
No, that's his cool gamer handle, but his Twitch name is DAT Silly. And we call it the Silly Squad, the people following him.
Is he doing numbers? Is he doing numbers?
What
does he got M's? We got millions? Is he, how many people is he watching his Twitch stream?
He's a starter streamer, right? So he hasn't gotten many followers yet, but I find a really almost chaotic joy out of going into his chat box with like an anonymous name and like screwing with his subscribers.
Oh, nice.
And screwing with him at the same time. And I had to finally admit to him that it was me, but I've had
so much
fun.
So you're engaged in trollish behavior with your friends online.
I am. And I almost feel it. I almost feel like there's some network effects there, right? Like it boosts his image to see someone so invested in talking on his chat. And at the same time, I get to have fun with people.
Yeah, so, there you go. No, fair enough.
I haven't played Fortnite. I think that's where we're getting to. Both of you and I haven't played Fortnite, but that's where this starts.
Case. Yeah, this case. And yeah.
Epic Games, I guess, owns Fortnite and also owns something called Unreal Engine, which, if you don't know,
is the Unreal. I mean, I played Unreal.
On the Mandalorian. Right? Like, the graphics of Mandalorian? Unreal Engine.
Yes. So this is what's fascinating. The Unreal Engine, as far as just, and I should have pulled this as well. But engines are basically eating the world, right? That's what's absolutely fascinating about this. These game engines are basically, they are really a massive driver for a whole bunch of high tech industries. There's urban planning, architecture, automotive engineering, a whole bunch of live music and events. So a lot of people, or at least a lot of the high tech firms, have really shifted their workflows and designs towards a lot of this stuff, which really to me is the kind of the fascinating bigger context of both, you know, of all of these companies, is that we see this kind of growing giant in, you know, we see this growing giant in Epic and Unreal and all these kind of related gaming technologies and the ability to have an effect on, you know, not just on gaming, but also kind of on general life and being a very, very applicable and important part of the ecosystem.
Well, that makes a lot of sense then why the motion for preliminary injunction was granted in part on the effect on little components of Epic Games like Unreal Engine. They were able to get a preliminary injunction. That's why that happened. That's why that makes any moves in the whole thing. So back to Fortnite, back to Epic Games. Here's what happened. Epic Games decided that the 30% cut Apple and Google Play and Android stores take off of their apps every time somebody downloads and every time someone makes an in-app purchase was kind of ridiculous, right? It's 30% skimmed off the top. It's a pretty huge cut, especially for starting developers. Not Epic Games, but for developers who are just getting started, you can only really make 70% revenue off of your game. And usually it's not very much revenue in the first place, right? So they saw that and decided it was probably an antitrust violation. At least Tim Sweeney says it was. And they decided to release this little functionality within the Fortnite game to do in-app purchases, but not through the app stores, just through Epic Games, I guess, or through the Fortnite platform directly.
Which is
a big no-no for the app store's terms of services because they want their cut on everything.
Yep.
And whenever they released this thing on August 12th, maybe 13th, like almost immediately, the app stores took them down, like took all the Fortnite apps down.
Yeah.
And the day after was whenever Epic Games filed their complaints. just right there on the day after. They were ready. This was kind of planned. And that's where this gets super interesting. When we go back to the industry infighting, I mean, this is set up. They've been prepared for this. They've been waiting for something like this to happen.
So they knew exactly the reaction they were going to get from Apple, and they triggered it, and therefore they had this action, right? And then it's like, well, now we can bring a case against you because you kicked us off of your platform. So now,
Here's the kicker.
Let's go for it.
There's no monetary relief they're seeking. They're not seeking money. They're not like suing Apple and Google and saying, pay us some of your billions.
Wait, what?
They're just saying, cut it out. They're just saying, cut it out, because we're not the only developers who are having this issue. This is crap. This is not a competitive ecosystem.
Okay.
And isn't that the most fascinating part?
Yeah. So they're going for an ecosystem change and not monetary relief. I guess I didn't realize. I guess in all of this, the news, I didn't really get that sense, right? And I have been keeping up with all of this. I guess I didn't really correctly realize that.
Well, that's really, really big, right? The complaint, like I did, you kind of find little fun tidbits like that. And it really kind of shapes the way you perceive this case.
Read the footnotes. That's like always what we should be doing. I know I should have read the footnotes in this one. So, okay. All right. Yeah, so
now we've set this thing up. Now you see why this whole Fortnite chapter in the antitrust saga is big, right? It's a big thing. It's not state attorneys generals or the FTC or the DOJ bringing a suit. It is a really big game developer saying these app stores have got to go, right? And we can talk about app stores in general. I mean, just look at Steam, right? Steam, the place where you can download games versus Epic Games, where you can do kind of the same thing. Epic Games has a policy where they only charge like 8-12%.
Yeah.
I don't know specifically what Steam charges, but you know, Apple.
So Steam charges the typical 70-30 cut. As much as this is what's interesting about all this. As much as Epic does say, like, you know, this cut is, it should be changed. And that's, from my understanding, that is one of the biggest parts of all of this, right? It's the it's the percentage take. I mean, from my understanding, there's also some contractual agreements and the ability to, like, you know, push consumers into a different platform, that there's also concerns there as well.
Right.
But this 70-30 cut is pretty common, right? It's common across the industry. And it's also,
argument is like, it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be standard cuts, right? It should be competitive. It shouldn't be a big company that just has a platform and takes a cut off of everything, benefiting from developers who are just trying to get their name out there with their apps.
And that's doesn't that naturally, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah,
that's an interesting argument to say that the mere existence of a 70-30 cut, despite the fact that it's like whatever the industry standard, that they're
then now you understand why they did one of those 1984 commercials. This is my favorite part about all of this. So they released they filed their complaints with Apple, and in the complaint, the first paragraph of the Apple complaint, at least, is talking about the 1984 ad that Apple released going after big IBM, Big Blue, where, you know, you have the actress and she runs down the hallways and we're in this Big Brother Orwellian scene. She's running down the hallways with a sledgehammer and he's saying, like, we will persevere. And she does a couple spins, throws the sledgehammer at the thing and breaks Big Brother. And then, like, it says, don't let Big Blue take over the information age, something to that effect, right? So Fortnite made a commercial. And in this commercial, it has the female main character of Fortnite. I guess it's the main character. I'm kind of making this up because I don't know who she is. But it's the main character of Fortnite. She's female and she's running with a sledgehammer. And it's not a sledgehammer. It's like one of those Fortnite building hammers. And it's a unicorn on top.
Yeah.
And she's running away from guards. And there's a whole host of little animated characters sitting in the room, just like the 1984 ad. And she does some twirls. She throws a sledgehammer at the screen, breaks it. And then instead of like having the screen bust and blow smoke all at the crowd, just hit my boom stand, if that tells you how excited I am. She busts it and then she just drops the thing and just walks out. And there are some people who just kind of stand up and look at her, and it's kind of just idle. And it's such an interesting artistic way to put this, like, hey, everyone, this is not the way things should be. And, oh, wow, look, some people are now taking notice. It's sort of the point of the ad. And it says, in 2020, we released this thing where we could make in-app purchases on the App Store. We're now filing suit against Apple because they banned us from their platform. Don't let Apple turn 2020 into 1984. And it's a super powerful ad for an animated, weird, wonky, like gamer ad. It's kind of powerful because it harks back to the Apple ad that really changed a lot of people's minds back when Steve Jobs was trying to get Apple off the ground.
You know what's really interesting about, oh yeah, I don't want to, Apple is this fascinating company to me, right? I was about to go into this. I always forget the name of it, but they, Apple ended up having what, a big fight about their platform. Somebody, I think, what was it called? Like the Einstein computer back in the day. So they shot down an upstart company that was using Apple tech effectively, and they took them to court. So Apple is this interesting company. Yeah, it was like Einstein company or something along. Because I mean, when you look at IBM, the reason why IBM is a successful platform, I mean, this is the Microsoft platform, right? It's like IBM, Microsoft. In part, the reason why it was such a successful platform is because you had these, you know, organizations that were using the IBM operating system. But let's move past that for a second and talk about this case in more detail. So you've been following this courtroom drama, right?
I have.
Yeah, what's been going on there? What's this what's been going on with the Economist? I'm actually really, really interested in this.
Yeah. This is kind of one of my more favorite parts about the trial, not the whole movement here, because obviously it's the ad for me. But when Epic filed its complaint, it was talking about tying agreements. It was saying that what Apple was doing was anti-competitive. It had a monopoly on the iOS app development systems. And in response, in their motion to dismiss, Apple said, Epic does not undertake any elaborate inquiry in its motion. For example, it fails to enlist any economist to support its contrived market definitions and tying theories. It conveniently ignores that Fortnite can be played on numerous platforms with or without support from Apple, even as Epic touts that fact in its advertising and communications to users. So what did Fortnite do? What did Epic Games do? They went out and they found an economist.
Yeah.
And who is that economist? David Evans.
Yeah.
We know David Evans. We like
David Evans is one of the David Evans is how do you describe somebody like David Evans? He's constantly cited in Supreme Court cases, you know.
Yeah.
When I think of
multi-sided markets, I think Evans and Schmalensee. That's what I think.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
The fact that they went and got David Evans is like okay then Apple, here's our economist. Try to compete with it.
Yeah.
But then David Evans took the stand yesterday. And whenever you take the stand, for anyone who doesn't know, I'm sure everyone that listens to this understands how court works. But whenever you take the stand for the first time, it's pro your side. And then the opposing side is able to come and cross-examine your witness, poke holes in their arguments, ask them tough questions. And then the side that you've been asked to come sit on the stand by, is able to kind of do rebuttal and try to fix what you screwed up in your statements. So David Evans took the stand yesterday, and this is for Epic. And he was allowed to take a look at Apple's profit and loss statements. But what he compared Apple to was not the Google Play Store or the Android App Store. It was China's Alibaba, eBay, Argentina's Mercado Libre, Japan's Rakuten, and Etsy, which, if you know anything about these platforms, they're all physical platforms. Whereas an app it's software. It's not a physical product. So the first question that I had really was just sort of, why are you comparing physical product markets to intangible product markets? Because that doesn't make so much sense. I'm guessing it's because he's done a lot of research on them. And Will, you could tell me for sure. Is that right?
Oh yeah. No. He has done a whole bunch of work on this. Right. And it's this question about, right. This to me is actually a very, very difficult question writ large, right? You have this industry, we do have, and I know I keep on kind of going back to it, but we do have an industry standard. And I think the real central question about this is whether or not this kind of industry standard that is set, and it's a 70-30 is a pretty common way of splitting the revenue. Is that as an industry standard a result of some sort of monopoly that exists because of these companies? Or is it because maybe that is, I don't know, the kind of the central agreement or the agreement for all these different kinds of contracts?
Well, that sort of gets into this the substance of what he was giving us in his testimony, which is this It's that Apple's R&D to sales ratio is very low. Of course, I have a finance degree, and whenever I was in college, my professor gave me the spreadsheet so I could crunch everyone's numbers and figure out all these ratios, but I don't know what the R&D to sales ratio is. Do you?
Yeah, that's really surprising. Typically, the R&D to sales ratio, I mean, a lot of that stuff is not typically, I don't understand why it would apply in this context, right?
Yeah.
Because we do know that there's a certain kind of value that one gets from having the backbone and the infrastructure. And mm-hmm. in part, that's what I think that Epic is saying, is that they want to be able to be effectively on the App Store, or at least to be able to be downloaded for the iPhone and right. have the same thing as the App Store. And the question is whether or not that sort of platform can exist on an iPhone, whether or not you can yeah. force a company or force somebody like iPhone to have or open up their system. I mean, yeah. I don't know. This is a long way of kind of answering the R&D question, the R&D to sales ratio question, which is that, to me, in part, I feel like that's kind of a sidestep of the overall question,
yeah.
right? Which is whether or not this is an acceptable practice or not.
Right.
The question of R&D.
I think what they're really getting to here is that the whole App Store accounts for like 2/3 of Apple's revenue, right?
Yes.
There were conversations exactly. about whether they should limit it to a $1 billion cap because it just makes so much money. And yes. I think, and I'm sure I'll find out that I'm wrong later, but I think that this whole argument is just pointed towards the fact that there are these multi-sided markets that we like. And that Evans is trying to say, hey, but this isn't a good one. This is an anti-competitive one. And really, it kind of comes back to the cross-examination, which, if you're following along with me, this is whenever Apple's lawyers come up and ask the tough questions, and they can be leading, which I've never understood why they can lead a witness and be. So Apple's lawyer, Swanson, is asked, this is all from Twitter, so I'm not making original arguments, but the quote is, Apple's lawyer Swanson has asked a lot of questions of Evans about how Apple's App Store competes with Android app stores. And Evans just flat out said that they don't. They don't compete at all with Android app stores. Android app stores do not meaningfully constrain Apple, is what Evans said. So on cross-examination, he's saying, yeah, I compared it to Etsy, I compared it to eBay, but I did it because, you know, Apple's app store doesn't compete with Google's app store.
But doesn't the entire product and package compete against each other, right? The reason why you buy, say, a Google product is because you understand that there is going to be like this open, there's going to be still an openness to these technologies, right?
Right.
That you go towards Android because, you know, perhaps you don't like Apple, right? My yeah. father had an Android for quite a many years because he just didn't like Apple. But I think that's different than like the entire package. And yeah, this to me is still it's not that it's a dense subject, but I would say that it's kind of it's an unnerving subject because
yeah.
you see competition, right? Like I understand at core some of the issues that Apple's, both Apple's lawyers and also what David Evans is getting at here, right? Mm-hmm. But how do consumers actually, at the end of the day, how do they choose these products? And to right. me, the choice of these products is you kind of buy the entire package, right? And I don't know. I don't know that it's, yeah, I don't know. This is still one of those areas where I have to do a lot more consideration and thinking because I don't have a natural sense of where this should end up personally.
Yeah, really is like, what are they competing for? These various app stores, they're competing for revenue, but other than that, they've got the same prices. They've got the same apps.
Yeah.
Usually, it's basically the same thing. So, what are they competing for? Really,
is revenue?
And I think that's what Evans is getting at. But it also sort of narrows the market so that the only market at issue in the Apple case is the Apple app development iOS software store. So the most...
Which is that, but like, yeah, exactly. But it's like, is that the real market of interest here, right? Is the market that the competitive...
You're getting at is just how important it is to define the relevant market up front. And
totally,
Apple and
totally.
Epic... as is all antitrust cases, mostly, have had an argument over what the relevant market is. I mean, Epic is saying that it's the iOS development system, whereas Apple is saying it's everything from PlayStation to Xbox to Nintendo to Google Play to Android. And if it's a large market, that means that Apple's market share, which is sort of the determination factor of of how much power a company has. Their market share would be less if the market is bigger and it includes PlayStation.
Yeah, Nintendo. Yeah, of course, of course.
But if it only includes iOS platforms, which is only Apple, then all of a sudden they have like 100% share, right?
Yeah, of course. Of
According to David Evans, or maybe not David Evans, but this tweet that I pulled, Apple has approximately 50% market share. That's kind of been accepted by Epic. Or it's sort of been accepted by Epic and Apple, but that's sort of the danger zone, right? Even 20 to 30%,
I mean, not necessarily,
of market
right?
share has kind of been the threshold where a court says, that's a little too much.
And yeah, but this to me seems to be an odd thing to really say, hey, the threshold is 50%, because in part, again, if you're narrowly defining it in that way, then yes, of course, the 50% matters. But
yeah,
the percentage, what you would want to say, or at least what you would be concerned about, is the ability to raise or lower prices or limit competition. And that's right. The question. It's like, is what Apple is doing, is that limiting competition writ large in this yeah. space? Right. And I don't know.
You're better suited to answer this question, but
I'm just, I don't know.
Comes down to cross elasticity of demand.
Yeah. Yes.
That's what it comes
exactly,
down to.
Exactly.
And to me, that's just a bunch of gobbledygook. But to you, that's something. It means something.
Yes. I mean, it's really just the ability or the power that the demand for whatever this, you know, for the App Store, for the Apple App Store has yeah. on that product. And it's like on both ends, right? So there's like these two things that are interacting. It's demand for the App Store, but it's also demand of gamers or gaming like producers, right? The right. game developers to actually have demand for whatever that platform is as well, right?
Yeah.
And so you have literally cross elasticities. The demand for the game has this interaction with the demand for gamers, right? And
right.
that, to me, that's the reason why it's really hard for me to often parse what's going on here. And, I know there's a lot else that's going on, and I'm kind of excited to talk about this in the future, because I want to yeah. do a little bit more digging on my own end. Because honestly, I mean, I'm still, this area is something I haven't focused a lot in. But yeah, let's talk about generally like this bigger context here in the last couple of minutes, which is really the Spotify thing, right? We also see this, yeah. There's a Spotify case happening. There's a whole bunch of other cases that are happening as well. I feel like there's also European
testimony.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of stuff.
Representative said he liked Holly's proposal, which is really kind of bizarre to me. I've never heard anyone say that before.
Which was
ever
which,
about
which
Holly.
Proposal was it? Oh yeah. I forget the name. We'll put it in the show notes, but I know what the bill that he's talking about. Anyway. Yeah. The Senate hearing, Spotify, what else, like what's the bigger context here in, you know, writ large in Congress that we should be paying attention to?
Well, we can just look at Spotify, for example. Spotify had this really great streaming service. I've had it for a little over 10 years now. And what it allowed you to do was pay a subscription fee that was like $10, and you could stream all the songs you wanted. And it was awesome. And then Apple released their own streaming service with even more songs. It had the Beatles, which was a real selling point. And its price was something like $8.99, whereas Spotify's price was like $10. And the reason why Spotify's price was $10 was because they were paying like $2 to Apple just to be on their app store, and they had to cover the price. But Apple doesn't have to pay itself. And it was like, hey, we'll just put it at cost. And in doing that, that's kind of anti-competitive, because there's no way that Spotify is going to get more downloads than iTunes or than Apple's Music Play service if it costs, you know, $2 or $3 more. So that's sort of the bigger context, is these companies that most people have grievances with sort of moving in on markets that they see as opportunities. And instead of just elevating other developers, other software, other companies, and making them an integral component of their companies as partners, they're sort of entering into that business. And I think that that's sort of one of the main cruxes for most of the reasonable people. Most of the unreasonable people, it's something about conservative censorship. You know, we're taking down Parler, or Apple is taking down Parler, or Amazon is stopping hosting Parler, or some other crazy thing that's kind of common sense to most people, but seems like an outrage to others. And that's sort of what's also driving this antitrust conversation. But if we just want to narrow it down to the App Store,
yeah,
it's really just about, are app stores taking advantage of developers to the extent that developers aren't making more games consumers aren't any better off, and the economy as a whole is harmed. That's the big question.
Yeah. That to me is a really tough question to answer. I mean, because in part it's like, okay, so, you know, this, especially going back to this Spotify and, you know, Apple spat that's going on there as well. Right. So, yeah. So you raise your price, you know, mm-hmm. or not even necessarily you raise your price, but as Spotify has a slightly higher price, right? I never bought Spotify. I bought Spotify online first.
Oh, yeah. Us.
So I'm not even using the normal like app system. And so that sort of ability to, I don't know, go and use other platforms to buy your Spotify, right? My Spotify has always been done. It's never been purchased ever through the App Store.
Same. No. And let me just clarify, like,
what's
Spotify?
Do you have
is
a sense of
elsewhere?
That?
And then the app is actually free, but
yes,
in order
which
to get
is interesting.
All the ads, you have right? to get the subscription, right?
Yeah.
Whereas you could just ditch the subscription, get iTunes for free or Apple Music for free and get the subscription to that. And it's a little cheaper because every in-app purchase, meaning every time someone subscribes through Spotify, through their app, mm-hmm. they have to pay a cut to Apple.
Yeah. How many people see that? See, I feel like we need to have more data on this because I just don't, mm-hmm. I don't have a very good sense of.
Well, it's all under seal right now in the court. And the yeah. judge has stated that she might release some of it in her ruling.
Ooh, so that'd be I hope interesting. They do that. Yeah. I really do hope they do that because this to me seems to be like, this is like just another one of those instances where it's just a really thorny issue because again, Spotify, you have a latecomer, right? You have iTunes, the new version of iTunes is very much a latecomer on the streaming scene. Yeah. I mean, I know I have friends that still use, what is it? Not, was it Rhapsody? Like I've got friends who still use Rhapsody.
You still have friends using Rhapsody? Oh,
right?
Wow.
Right. I have a couple friends who still are like just diehard Rhapsody, like that.
Wow.
Rhapsody subscribers. And in part, we've also seen with Spotify, I mean, I don't know that I would switch over, even though I know there's a slightly different and slightly larger back-end library for
yeah.
iTunes. I mean, I'm Spotify,
right.
and I'm like dyed-in-the-wool Spotify.
I've got both,
change over.
And I have one really good reason, because
What's
you
that?
Can't play an alarm from a Spotify song, but you can from an iTunes song. So if you want to wake up to The Lion King like I do, yeah. you got to have Apple Music, and that's the
it.
Only reason why I have
that's
it.
All you have that. Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like a waste. I'll probably fix it at some point, and Apple will win my business over Spotify, but for now... Right, I've got both. I'm objective.
You are objective. I think we can probably wrap up there. I think that's a good way to end this conversation.
I think this is a good one, yeah.
Caden, thanks for coming and talking about this. I'm sure we'll probably be talking about this more, right? Because this to me is just, I don't know.
This isn't going away.
This isn't going away, one. This just seems to me to be, I don't know. This seems to be much more of a... like a boxer's brawl rather than a huge revelatory. I mean, it could be a huge revelatory change in the system, right?
Right.
I don't know. Well, I'm excited to kind of dive into this more in the future because
only time will tell.
I'm hoping more data will be released and we'll have a better sense of all
yeah.
this stuff.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that to me would really help answer some of the kind of core questions I have about substitutability and the
yeah.
consumers and where they're shifting and what they believe their preferences are. Where they feel like competition actually exists for consumers.
Yeah.
Because I feel in part maybe I'm being too esoteric about this, but at the end of the day, a lot of it, this to me matters what's happening to the consumer. And I guess I just am mm-hmm. not really, really clear about that sometimes, that how
yeah.
the consumers actually perceive these sorts of spats that are happening, these price changes. Right? Are they
well, a really, really great example recently is the data privacy thing with Apple's
yeah.
iOS 14.5 update. Have you seen
yeah.
the consumer choice to say opting out instead of opting in?
Yes.
And it's been like way skewed on the side of opting out of ads.
It's like 4% are opting
yes.
in. Yeah.
Yes. And the rest yeah. are just like, no, I'm so glad I have choice because I'm going to say no, don't track me. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting. And again,
and here we've
I mean,
been just saying that consumers like ads, right? We were totally wrong.
I mean,
like
but it's not that they don't like ads, it's they don't want to be tracked.
They don't like the tracking. Yeah.
They don't like the tracking. We can get into this.
Which was the issue we should have all been talking about the whole time.
Nah, we should. Don't worry. We'll get into this at some point because
yeah,
that's the reason
I'm
hesitant
now, right?
to go down this route about Apple
yeah.
and Fortnite because typically the more and more you start digging into these issues, you're like, well, wait a second. There's usually other layers to peel back.
There's always a what about this thing you can bring up.
Oh man, what about it? All right, with that, we're going to end.
It's been great to talk.
Yep. Thanks much, Katie.